Dogs make the best companions for humans, this podcast aims to help make humans better companions for their dogs. Welcome to the Beru Podcast, a modern lifestyle podcast for dogs and their people. I'm your host, Charlotte Bain. I've been caring for other people's dogs for more than 15 years. And while I've learned a lot in my career, I definitely don't know it all. So I've collected an ever-evolving roster of amazing dog people, and I learn new things from them all the time. Hi, you guys. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Beru Podcast. In this episode, in honor of Valentine's Day, certified professional dog trainer Irit Bloom is back to help those of you whose dogs may be buzz-killing your relationships. We chat about what to do if your dog gets anxious or antsy every time you even go in for a hug with your significant other, how to introduce your dog to a new love interest, how to introduce your dog to a new love interest dog, and even how to introduce your dog to a new love interest cat. We also touch on some of the ways our dogs can really improve our relationships. So let's jump into the chat. So today I wanted to talk about what to do if your puppy or your dog is buzz killing your relationship, right? So I think in honor of Valentine's Day, I want to jump into some of those things because they're really common. And I don't think people really really think about that until they're in the moment. So I wanted to start with probably one. There's several things that I wanted to talk about, but one of the most common things that I hear from people, and you mentioned that you actually hear from some of your clients, is that anytime someone goes to hug or embrace or even be close, be intimate with their partner, their dog goes bonkers, whether it's barking, whether it's jumping on them or trying to get in between the two or any of those things. So I think that is something that probably we can help people with, put some kind of like functional things into play for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a client right now where the dog does all of those things and also nips at them. So okay, that's really hard to ignore.
That's like my friend's dog. Yep.
The little teeth jabbing at you. Not bad bites. It's not like anyone's getting injured, but that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt, right? So yeah, it's a really interesting thing because I have to say, like from sort of a behavior analysis standpoint, it can be hard to figure out why.
Right.
Like, why are they doing this? Are they feeling left out? And so they're trying to get into the situation. So it's just like, oh, wait, I lost the attention. I want the attention back. That's one possibility. Sometimes it seems like they're guarding one person against the other. So it's like, you know, I guard mom. And so dad can't get near her or mom can't get near her, depending on the type of couple. So it can get really complex, and there's a lot of anxiety in the dogs usually when this is happening. They're really struggling to cope with the two family members paying more attention to each other or getting so close to each other or whatever that happens to be. So it's tough. It's a real tough problem. And the problem is you can't really deal with it in the moment very well. It's something you actually kind of have to train for if you want it to get better.
So is it like a jealousy thing, you think, or we don't know, probably different for each
dog. So the state of research into emotions and cognition in dogs is way better than it was 10 years ago, but it's nowhere near good. Really, it's just and what I mean by that is a lot of research is being done, which is fantastic. It makes me super, super happy. But compared to all the other fields of research out there with animals, like talk about rodent studies, when people are studying how mice behave, there are literally thousands more times studies than what's going on in the dog world. So we're very, very early in the process, which means, I'm just going to back up and say, in science, the key to finding evidence for things and starting to form strong hypotheses about why things are happening is to have a lot of data. And that means a lot of repetition. Okay. So it's not just one study doesn't prove anything. You need to have 100 studies that all say the same thing before you can really start to feel like that's a strong conclusion to draw.
Okay.
And what that means is in our dog world, people are doing like maybe 20 or 30 studies a year.
Okay.
And they're all on different topics. Mm-hmm. And we've only been doing this for, it's really been like a renaissance in dog research that's maybe barely coming up on 10 years. So we only have like a couple hundred studies and they don't all look at the same thing. So with that said, based on what we understand about other animals, we can make some guesses about dogs. So we can guess that they can feel basic emotions like love and joy and panic, which is a big one if you have a dog with separation anxiety.
Yeah.
Or grief, which is about being separated from the people that they love, like again, in separation anxiety. Mm-hmm. Or you know, if one of your pets passes away and the other one is grieving. That is a very real thing that happens to basically all mammals, as far as we can tell. Mm-hmm. Jealousy is a little bit more complex, and we're just not sure. We just don't know yet if they experience jealousy, or is this just grief, let's say, because they're losing that attention, right? So I'm grieving the loss of my interaction, and then I'm getting agitated. And then maybe a little bit of that panic comes in and the agitation gets really, really big and it gets out of control.
Right.
So we can't be sure what's happening. I can't like sit the dog down, lie them on the couch and say, okay, now tell me about your mother and tell me how you're feeling. Because they don't, they just don't do that verbal stuff. But what I can do is I can try different solutions and see what works best.
Okay. So what would some of those solutions be? Because I think a lot of times when people, I have a friend who every time she gets close to her boyfriend, the same thing happens. Her dog is a small dog, but she nips her, she jumps on them. She's tried like putting the dog outside and then he just scratches at the door and then, you know, and barks obsessively. She's tried like putting the dog in a crate with like a Kong and she still does. That's not enough for her. So what are some of the things that we could think about doing or implementing ahead of time to help with those situations like that? So it's not a super buzzkill, essentially.
Right, right.
And we don't want to stress out the dog either. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to stress out the dog and it's stressful for you and it's stressful for the person you're with. It's just no fun all around.
Yeah.
So the first thing I'll say is, I love that she's tried the like having the dog outside and having the dog in a crate, because both of those are solutions that'll work for many dogs. And you just get them away from the action. Sometimes it's good enough.
I'm going to say, I think she hasn't done that. I think she's only done that like in the moment. So I don't think she's, I'm not going to call her out, but I'm saying, I think maybe she hasn't worked on that, you know, at times where she's not, you know, she forgets about it, you know, until the moment happens again. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it is really easy to forget about. So
yeah.
I will say the most common solution for my clients that has worked has been putting the dog somewhere else.
Okay.
And my experience generally is that dogs like this, you want them to be away from you, because it's almost like even if they're in a crate, if they can see you, then they're still stressed that they can't be with you.
Right.
But if they're so far away that whatever is going on with you, they're not smelling you as clearly, they're not hearing you as well, they might calm down more. So I'm going to say on average, this is a situation where having the dog like a room over is usually better than trying to confine them in the same room. But you just brought up a really good point, which is you need to practice that, because if your dog can't tolerate being in a crate at all, then they're definitely going to not be able to tolerate it when you are sort of stressing them out because of whatever emotion it is that they're experiencing in this moment. So definitely I have to say, like, sometimes people get really weird about crates. And I am a huge fan of crates.
I am too.
I'm all about the crates. Like, every dog in the world should be comfortable in a crate. And I'm not saying lock your dog in the crate 16 hours a day, which would be horrible. By the way, do not do that.
No.
I'm saying that dogs should be able to tolerate that. Like, let's say, I know that not everyone listening to this is in Southern California, but just for us as a Southern California audience, we have earthquakes, we have fires, we have floods.
Yeah.
You never know when you might need to go into some kind of shelter situation because your home is not livable.
Right.
And if your dog can be crated, they can come with you. And if they can't be crated, sometimes they're not welcome. And you wind up having to put them at the Humane Society, which is a lot less pleasant for your dog. So
yeah, that's stressful.
Just for and that. It sounds,
right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Just for that, all dogs should learn how to be crated. And then with that said, look up, there's all kinds of wonderful crate training plans out there. I won't go too deeply into this because this would be like a 1 hour rabbit hole all
maybe,
by itself.
Maybe we'll do a separate one on crate training.
Yeah, crate training is a great topic though. Okay. But look up, like, Kiko Pup talks about crate training. Okay. Susan Garrett has something called crate games, which is really fantastic.
Okay.
I personally, I'll give you my like five sentence-ish kind of quick description. What I do is I start with the crates in the room, the door is closed, and there's treats in the crate. Mm-hmm. So the dog can't get in, but there are treats in there. Mm-hmm. And then you open the door, and when the dog walks in, you drop more treats in, but you don't shut the door. Okay. And then when the dog walks out, you shut the door, drop some more treats in, and let the dog think about that for a while.
Yep.
After you do that for a few days, your dog's going to start saying, hey, the crate is kind of an awesome place to be. Right. They're going to go in, you drop treats, and then you very gradually, this is the part I'm going to gloss over. Right. You just sort of like touch the door, drop a treat.
Right.
Touch the door and swing it an inch, drop a treat. Or if it's a flap, lower the flap a tiny bit, feed a treat. Until you can actually shut the door, find a way to keep feeding treats while the door is shut, then open it. And if the dog stays in there, they get more treats. And if they come out, the treats stop. And you kind of build up from there. So it turns into this awesome spot where they get a treat and maybe you put a chew in there for them. And they're like, I love it in here. And I have clients where their dogs hate the crate. And we go through this process and their dogs are like scratching at the door when the crate door is shut because they want to get in there because it's super fun zone.
Yeah.
So start with that mindset. Like, let's make the crate super awesome. And then you have to build up, like, can I be, I step away for a minute, I come back, I drop a treat, I step away, I wait till the dog is calm and then drop a treat. You can very slowly build this up. And in that case, then what happens is when your romantic partner arrives, you sort of like maybe half an hour you spend with the dog and then you crate the dog. It's no big deal because you've been doing it all along.
Right.
And then the two of you don't have to worry about the dog interfering, whether that means you want to go for a walk together or go to a room together. The dog is in the crate and everything's fine because the dog's comfortable in the crate. So that's a big one that I really love.
Can
is
I ask
crating.
A quick question? I know we're not going to focus on crate training, but is a dog ever too old to be crate trained or can you crate train at any age?
You can crate train at any age as long as the crate is the right size. And it's so crates should be big enough for a dog to walk in and turn around and lie down comfortably.
Got it.
Okay. And that's especially important for your older dog because your older dog may be feeling a little arthritic and creaky. And if they can't sort of stretch and move around, then it can be literally painful.
Yeah.
To be in, like, think about how you feel in an airplane seat when you've been in it for more than 5 hours. Take that and like multiply it, you know, because they don't have the option to stand up and ask the person next to them to let them go to the bathroom, right? They're just stuck in there.
Yeah.
So that's it's a really great question though. So I will say I have trained dogs of all ages. I love to do this with puppies because it helps them learn to be alone. But I've done this with senior dogs. Any dog can learn to be crated. There are occasionally dogs that have some kind of really severe trauma about confinement. And once in a while I meet a dog where I'm like, you know, let's not use a crate. Let's use an X pen, which is like a baby pen for dogs because the smallness of the crate seems to just disturb the dog too much. Right. But then you do the same thing. The door is open to the X-Pen, you walk in, you get treats, you walk out, the treats stop, I shut the door, drop some treats in. So same general concept.
Yeah.
And that's what, that would be my preferred suggestion, is just put the dog away. Because the training process to get them used to you hugging or kissing or whatever is kind of involved and you're going to have to really dedicate yourself to it for a while before you see progress. And I'm happy to talk about that process too, but I would say start with just the dog is in another place, safely confined and comfortably confined.
Right. And not for a very long time, but just for like.
And not for, I mean, you should never, this is like our PSA portion here. Never crate a dog for more than 4 hours in a row, period.
Okay.
Because there, you get into that whole, like, they're stuck in a certain position. They can develop blood clots just like we can. Like, all kinds of things can go wrong. So you don't want to do it because it's just physically unhealthy. If you have a puppy, 4 hours is way too long.
Yeah.
Most young puppies can only tolerate an hour or two in the crate. Mm-hmm. An adult dog can handle 4 hours.
Okay.
That's usually okay. But if you're going to have to do more than 4 hours, use an X-Pen so that okay. they can move around.
Okay, good to know. Yeah, I have a dog. I don't know if I'll include this, but I do have a dog that's still, he's about four now, and he sleeps in the crate overnight.
But oh, it's a big, sorry.
He has a very big crate, though. What were you going
to
say?
So let me mention, sorry. Okay. No, yeah. This brings up a really good, and one thing I forgot to say mm-hmm. is overnight, those rules don't apply.
Okay, good. Because I was like, he loves this crate overnight. Like, he's yeah, like, so, when he's ready to go to bed, he's got like sleepy eyes. And like, he's just like, can somebody put me in my crate? Even though I'm 4 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me reiterate this.
Okay.
During the daytime, at a time when the dog would normally be awake, 4 hours is the maximum.
Okay.
But if your dog sacks out for 10 hours overnight, they can be in the crate for 10 hours overnight.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Perfect. Good. I'm glad I brought that up to clarify that.
Yeah.
So do you want to touch on some of the ways that we can train our dogs to kind of tolerate romantic encounters?
Yes.
Being there.
So this is one of those things where you're going to feel like you're making no progress. So I just want to warn you, it's going to feel like you're making progress in like little millimeters mm-hmm. at a time. The key with training like this is if it's not going well, you need to slow down, not speed up. You need to make things easier, not harder.
Okay.
So let's take an imaginary couple.
Okay.
When they hug, the dog goes crazy.
Yeah.
There is some point where the dog's not going crazy, right? Where the dog's not jumping or nipping or barking or worming his way between them.
Yeah.
So imagine, let's say that when they're 10 feet apart from each other, I'm just making this up. When they're 10 feet apart, the dog is calm. Uh-huh. So you would say, okay, we're 10 feet apart. We're looking at each other. Uh-huh. The dog is calm. I'm just going to throw a treat in his general direction. Mm-hmm. He gets a treat. He's still calm. We step 1 foot closer. So each person steps 6 inches in. Dog is still calm, gets a treat. Step another 6 inches in. Dog is still calm, gets a treat. At some point, the dog is going to start to look more alert, or maybe they were lying down or sitting and they mm-hmm. stand up, or they're going to start moving towards you. That is the point where you go, whoa, this is too close. This is the place where we need to work. So let's say that's 6 feet apart, just to make up a number.
Right.
So we went 10, 10, 9.5, 9, 8.5, 8, and so on, got to 6.
Okay.
Now it's 6 feet distance. The dog is stepping towards us. So we go back out to 6.5 feet.
Got it. Okay.
We practice there for a little while until the dog is like, ho hum, I have no idea why you're even giving me treats. Mm-hmm. Then try that 6 inches closer again, that 6 inches each one. So they're like 6 feet apart. Mm-hmm. And the dog is okay with it. But then maybe you step into the next distance in, which we'll call 5.5 feet for the sake of the argument, even though I was saying we would move a foot at a time originally. Anyway, mm-hmm. we'll call 5.5 feet. And the dog stands up again. So now you know you need to work a little bit more at 6 feet of distance.
Right.
Okay. And you slowly work to the point where you can stand right next to each other. You're mm-hmm. not touching. You just are standing right next to each other. Mm-hmm. Everything I just said may take more than one training session.
Yeah.
So I just want to clarify that. This is not all going to happen in 10 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
Some dogs it will. Many dogs it won't.
Right.
So now that you're standing close to each other, we'll skip a few training sessions ahead. You're next to each other. One of you is just going to put an arm on the other. You're not going to both put arms around each other. It's only going to be one arm. One arm, dog stays calm, drop a treat. One arm, dog is not calm, mm-hmm. step back, regroup. And when you regroup, you're going to think about, okay, so we talked about how when we were 10 feet apart, we have to slowly move our way closer. When I put my arm on the person, that was too much. So what's between me having my arm at my side mm-hmm. and putting my arm on the person? Mm-hmm. There's like a whole bunch of movements, right?
Right?
So you just start moving like from your shoulder. Dog is calm. Drop a treat. Okay, now I can raise my hand to sort of shoulder level. Dog mm-hmm. is calm. Drop a treat. I can put my hand over the person, the other person's shoulder.
Right.
Dog is calm. Drop a treat.
Right.
Or if the dog is not calm, we back up. So there's sort of a concept that's running through all this.
Right.
And eventually with that mindset, you're going to add two arms from one person and then one arm and then the second arm from the other person. And then you're going to be hugging and you toss the dog an occasional mm-hmm. treat. from there, the goal would be, and again, remember, you're doing this informal training session, so it's going to feel really weird. These are not going to be like hugs that you're having fun with. These are going to be like hugs where you're like watching the dog. You're like, what is he going to do next?
Is this like desensitizing the dog essentially to your relationship? Yeah,
exactly. It's desensitizing to that closeness, that hugging, whatever it is that the dog is freaking out about.
Got it.
And desensitization is a process that takes a long time and a lot of steps. Mm-hmm. So once you get to the point where you can hug and the dog is okay, then the next thing you would do is you would slow down how often the treats arrive.
Right.
Now, another way you could do this, which for those of you who have already trained your dog to go to a mat, another way you could do this is you say, we're standing 10 feet apart. I'm going to send the dog to the mat.
Okay.
The dog goes to the mat. I'm going to deliver a treat over there. Uh-huh. And then I'm going to try 9.5 feet or 9 feet apart, send the dog to the mat. And you're going to keep testing. Can I send him to the mat at this distance, that distance, that distance? The moment you can't send him to the mat anymore, you know, you have to practice a little bit more before you make it harder. Okay. So the sending to the mat is sort of a barometer of the dog's mood. Is he really agitated and he can't hear anymore? Because that's what happens to all of us, right? When we get really, really anxious, we don't process things very well.
No, we don't.
So, oh my gosh, he's so agitated. He's being so challenged by this situation. He's having so much trouble coping that he can no longer go to his mat, even though he's a superstar at that behavior.
Yeah.
Okay. So then we stay at, let's say, 6 feet distance, go to mat, get a treat there, get another treat there, get another treat there, release the dog off the mat, then try 5.5 feet. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about this is, since you're sending the dog away, it's actually going to take him a while to get to you. So you have a little warning if the dog is going to come and suddenly interfere in your hug.
Yeah.
And you do exactly the same thing, but now you're sending the dog to the mat and dropping a treat whenever they get it right.
Right.
And if they get up off of the mat, you send them back there, but you might need to make it easier. So I love, so crates are like one of my favorite things. Mat work is another one of my favorite things.
Right.
Because if you have a dog who can go to a mat and just settle and stay there.
Yeah.
You can use that for all kinds of things,
right,
like visitors coming over, you hugging. Yeah. I have a client right now where
seems like a lot easier than the desensitizing them to that, you know?
Because it gives the dog a task.
Yeah, it gives them something to do instead of being obsessed with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. And this is what we're using. I have a client right now that they have an elderly mother who comes to visit. And when the elderly mother comes over, the dog just is jumping on her.
Bonkers.
And it's difficult for the elderly mother because she's just not young.
Yeah.
And he could theoretically even knock her over if he kind of hit the right angle.
Right.
And so this is one of the things we've been working on. Doorbell rings, go to your mat, hang out. Mm-hmm. And the dog knowing exactly where to be and what to do means that they have something to think about other than, oh my gosh, I have to go jump on you because you're hugging. Or in the case I was just talking about, jump on grandma because she just walked in the door.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the dog would end up making the connection like, oh, they're going in for a hug, I'm going to go to my mat?
Yes.
I mean, does that happen? Yeah.
It does. Okay. It absolutely does.
This is happening. I'm going to go get on my mat, or I'm going to go get in my crate.
Right.
Yeah.
And the best way to
that
make
would be ideal.
That happen. Yeah. The best way to make that happen is, so I'm going to use the word cue. And what I mean by a cue is the signal for something. It could be something that I say, it could be a hand motion, or it could be something that happens in the environment that I'm not even in control of. Mm-hmm. If I want to change, so right now, let's imagine I have Fifi trained to go to a mat. Mm-hmm. And I say, Fifi, go to your mat. And she goes to her mat. And so Fifi knows the phrase, go to your mat. That's her signal.
Right.
Now I want her to go to her mat when I hug. So what I'm going to do is, after I first made sure that she can handle all those things, I'm going to reach out for a hug and then immediately say, Fifi, go to your mat. And she's going to go to her mat. Mm-hmm. So we're inserting the new signal before the old signal.
Okay.
And the way animals make associations, Fifi's going to start noticing, hey, every time you hug, the next thing you do is you tell me to go to your mat. Mm-hmm. So I can get my treat faster if I start going there right when you hug.
Right. Right.
And so that's the order that we do it in. Whatever the new signal is, we're going to put it first, then use the old reliable signal. And then the dog does the behavior and gets rewarded. Okay. But if you do it enough times, the dogs love to jump ahead to the treat.
Right.
So they anticipate and they start doing that. And this is how I actually teach door manners and a ton of other things using this basic concept mm-hmm. so that I don't have to, as a human being, be like, wait, stop, ho, mm-hmm. all the time.
Right.
The door says to the dog, wait 5 feet away, because that's what we've right. always worked on. And in this case, it would be the hug says to the dog, go hang out on your mat.
Right. Would it be the same kind of a thing if you, let's say you are someone who's, you know, single and you're dating different people, or would this be more, and you every time you have, you know, there's a new person in your life, your dog is either gets weird about the new person or weird about you, one or the other. You know, they just start acting weird again. So either they're, you know, madly in love with your new person and getting weird around you, or they're just madly in love with you and they're getting weird around your new person. Would the same thing apply to that? Or would you be more apt to do something like the desensitization because you want to him to like have, they want the dog to have, you know, a better association with the new person?
That's a really great question. And by the way, can I say, like, don't you hate it when your dog likes someone else better than you?
Totally.
That is so annoying. But putting that aside. So I would say either technique would probably work because either way, the dog is associating when the person comes, I get good stuff.
Right.
But I would be inclined to do the mat one because it gives me that little task that the dog is trained at and is comfortable doing and is fluent at doing.
Right.
And so they don't have to sort of overcome the emotion as much because I've directed them to think about something else.
Right.
So my inclination would be to say, like, the next 3 to 7 people that you date, you go through this process with the mat so that the dog learns when you hug anybody.
Yes. Right.
Go to the mat. But dogs aren't really great at generalizing. They're going to be like, so if it's 2 p.m. on a Tuesday and Charlie is visiting, then I can go to my mat when I see a hug. But if it's not 2 p.m. or it's not Charlie, then I don't know what to do. So it really helps if you can be like, and I mean, you can just have random friends come over and hug them. It doesn't always have to be a romantic partner or your mother or your father or your, you know, siblings or whatever, some cousin from Albuquerque. I don't know. So I have a cousin in Albuquerque. So they all come, give you a hug. You get the hug, send the dog to the mat. And the dog starts to learn, whoever comes in and hugs you, my job is to be on the mat. So that would be my preference, I think, because the desensitization one is a little bit slower and more difficult to get volunteers for.
I was going to say your date might not be super interested in committing to that off the bat.
Although it might be a really good test. Like, is this person a keeper? Will they work with me to train my dog?
You're right.
Just saying.
That's true. Well, on that note, what if you're dating? So we're switching up just a little bit, but what if you're dating somebody and your dog they have a dog and your dog doesn't get along with that dog? How do you deal with that kind of a situation? Because obviously, if you're wanting to continue dating somebody, you're going to want the two of them to, you know, be a part of your lives, right?
Yeah.
Comment so, on that.
Yeah. So a few tips. No, it's funny. I'm actually in the middle of writing an article, not on the Valentine's Day aspect of this topic, but on the introducing dogs topic.
Okay.
So it's very fresh in my mind.
Okay, good. Yay.
So number one, first impressions matter. First impressions really, really matter. So don't, if this is someone that you, even if you're not sure if you might want them in your life long term, but you're dating someone and they're like, hey, I have a dog, let's get our dogs together.
Yeah.
Take the time to go through a proper introduction.
Okay.
Because if you sort of just throw them together and it doesn't work, and then the two of you as a couple wind up being a long term thing, then you're going to have all this bad first impression to undo.
Yeah.
So ways that you can do a good first impression. First of all, good news is you have one person per dog, right?
Yeah.
Or one person for each household of dogs.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of going on a long walk.
Right.
But you're not going on a long walk together. You're going on a long walk on opposite sides of the street.
Oh, interesting.
And you're walking in the same direction.
Okay.
And anytime one of the dogs looks across the street at the other dog, you say, oh, you're so clever for noticing Fifi, who is my dog of the day, apparently.
Yeah.
And
you love Fifi.
Yeah, hand them a treat.
Okay.
And then keep walking. So they don't, the problem, what dogs tend to do is they fixate. They're like, oh my gosh, there's a dog over there. Mm-hmm. Whether they're overexcited or scared, it doesn't doesn't lend itself to a calm, good greeting. I'll just put it that way.
Right. Right.
And so what I want is dog glances over, oh, Fifi, so clever. You saw Fido over there and Fifi gets a treat. And then Fido looks over at Fifi. And, oh, Fido, how clever of you to look at Fifi. And Fido gets a treat. Right. And so the two dogs are walking on opposite sides of the treat, opposite sides of the street.
And also the opposite sides of the treat, kind of.
That's true. Yeah. And they're learning that when they look over, they get a treat. And if right. they pay attention to you, they can get treats for that too. And you just do this until the dogs are like, whatever, there's a dog across the street, but I'm really not upset about it. Mm-hmm. Then you have one of the dogs walk ahead, and the other one crosses the street, and now you're following one behind the other at a distance of, I recommend, like 20 feet to start, so nobody gets too excited. Mm-hmm. And the dogs can see each other, and if the dog in front glances back, then you feed a treat to that dog for glancing mm-hmm. back. And if mm-hmm. the dog behind is staring, like, hey, Fifi, you noticed the dog. Good job. Fifi's in the back, apparently. And you hand Fifi a treat, and maybe you encourage Fifi and Fido to sniff around and do normal doggy yeah. things, so it's not all about the other dog. Then turn the dogs around so that the opposite dog is behind and do the same thing in the other direction. And the goal is for the dogs to be like, I have seen this dog for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And this is so not exciting anymore.
Right.
That it's okay.
Right.
Then whichever dog is friendlier.
Okay.
Put them in the front.
Okay.
And I do have to say, when I say friendlier, the dog also has to be fundamentally friendly. If neither of the dogs is friendly, it's a more complicated process.
Right.
And I won't go into that.
Okay.
But assuming that the dogs are both at least a little friendly, whichever one is friendlier, you allow the dog who's less friendly to come up and sniff that dog in the butt, which is the normal way for dogs to
get all up in there. Yep.
They're not supposed to be face to face. That's not natural dog greeting behavior.
Weird. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's very strange. So instead, dog sniffs, and then you're going to move the dog away, feed whoever was in back a treat. We'll say it's mm-hmm. Fifi. Fifi mm-hmm. sniffed Fido. Fifi moves away, gets a treat. Fido gets a treat. Mm-hmm. Do that a couple of times until when you let Fifi go sniff Fido, she's like, I don't even care. I've met him. I know what he smells like.
Yeah.
And then you do the same thing the opposite way mm-hmm. as long as Fifi doesn't get nervous, because she's going to be the less friendly dog, theoretically.
Right.
If she does get nervous, just don't do that at all. Like, don't have, because some dogs are like, what are you doing? You're sniffing my butt. This is so weird.
Yeah.
At that point, if everyone's still calm, so this is like my theme of the day. Everyone mm-hmm. has to be calm. Figure you're going to spend 90 minutes doing this. By the mm-hmm. way, 99, you know, an hour and a half doing this.
Yep. Wow.
If everyone's still calm, then you walk opposite each other, but if possible, with the dogs at least sort of 5 feet mm-hmm. separated, so that they're not coming straight at each other, but they're offset mm-hmm. by about 5 feet. And when you keep checking, basically I'm stepping forward saying, can the dog pay attention if I say her name? Hey, Fifi, if she can't look at me and she can only look at Fido, we're too close. We need to stop and back off. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to keep saying, Fifi, oh, good job, get a treat. Fifi, good job, get a treat. Fifi, mm-hmm. good job, get a treat. Meanwhile, the other person's going, Fido, good job, get a treat. When they're so close that they can practically touch, you're going to say hello, count in your head, 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000. After 3-1000, let's go. Mm-hmm. And either stick a treat in front of the dog's nose and draw mm-hmm. them away, or clap your hands or pat your side, mm-hmm. but get them to move on. So now we're doing, I call these flybys. We're doing flybys, right? The dogs go, oh, we're opposite each other, sniff, sniff, move on. Mm-hmm. We're opposite each other, sniff, sniff, move on. So they keep crossing each other's path, but then continuing in opposite directions.
Right.
If all of that goes well, then walk them side by side back to whatever home they're going into. Mm-hmm. The dog who's a stranger should walk in first. Yeah. Because if a dog is going to get territorial, it's usually the dog that lives there.
Right.
And there's a big difference between I walked into my space and there's somebody there.
Yeah.
And I'm in my space and someone's walking in. So you want, let's say this is Fido's house. Fifi walks in first, then mm-hmm. Fido walks in. Everyone's on leash. Do a couple more flybys. If that's all going really well, let go of the leashes. Don't take them off. Mm-hmm. Just drop them and see what the dogs will do.
Okay. And give them.
And in most cases, by then they're just going to be like, whatever.
Yeah.
Things to watch out for: if either of the dogs is way more energetic than the other, this is harder.
Right. Yeah.
because their energy levels don't match. Like in a perfect right. world, their energy levels would match. Doesn't always happen. Other things to think about, like if anyone's getting stiff or tense, mm-hmm. try to call them apart. Mm-hmm. Pull on the leash as a last resort, because when you pull on the leash, that can actually lead to tension. Aggression.
Yeah.
So try to call them apart. It's really, really worthwhile to take the time to practice saying Fifi, and Fifi turns to you and you give her a treat. Fifi, yeah. Fido gets a treat, so that when you say Fifi or Fido, they both go, hey, I know you're going to feed me a treat, and they trot over to you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And all of that will really help. But taking the time to make this a really careful introduction, and this can take less than 90 minutes with dogs who are pretty chill and relaxed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you have dogs who are unfriendly, you might want an expert to help you. I recommend reaching out to either someone who's listed on the IAABC website or someone mm-hmm. who's listed on the CCPDT website. Okay. Those will look for a certified behavior consultant. Mm-hmm. Both of those have certified behavior consultant qualifications. So CCPDT, IAABC. And they will help you if like one of the dogs is fundamentally not friendly, because then it's more like introducing cats for anyone who's ever done this.
That was going to be my next question. Like, what if your new partner has a cat and your dog like doesn't have any experience with cats, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And so let me really quickly back up and just say, if you have two super friendly dogs, you might be able to get this introduction done
super
in 20
easy.
Minutes.
Yeah.
But I want you to allow an hour and a half just in case.
Right.
And if you have a yard, great to have them meet in the yard instead of in the house. And if you have a neighbor's yard you can borrow, great to do that first drop leash introduction in the neighbor's yard, because nobody owns that, right?
It
doesn't belong to either dog.
Right.
So those are just a couple extra thoughts. So cats and dogs, number one rule of cats and dogs is you have to keep the cat safe and you have to keep the cat comfortable.
Right.
I would much rather have the dog be afraid of the cat than the other way around. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if your dog is 5 pounds or 50 pounds,
right.
it's still better for the dog to be afraid of the cat, because the dog can do more damage to a cat on average.
Yeah.
So, and there, it's a longer process.
Right.
I mean, if you're talking about introducing your dog to someone's cat, you're probably moving in together, would be my guess.
I guess, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. And at that point, it is worth taking a few weeks to make the introduction, which is kind of what you need to do, because cats don't usually get comfortable fast with anything.
Right.
So if you look up how to introduce two cats, if you want to bring a new cat in your household and you already have a cat, the process with dogs is pretty similar.
Okay.
What I like to add is that there's one person with each pet and they're training or playing with that pet behind a barrier far apart from each other.
Okay.
So that the two of them learn, I can have fun and focus on something else. This is more important for the dog than the cat.
Right.
Because the dog is going to tend to want to like zoom in and either sniff or maybe worse, depending on the dog's instincts.
Right.
The good news is that virtually every single dog can become friendly with cats. Mm-hmm. Even sighthounds can become friendly with cats. It just needs to be the right cat and the right sighthound. I will say there are some dogs who cannot do this. So bear that in mind. Some
I don't know anything about them, but I'm assuming they just have a high prey drive.
Anything that moves quickly, they will chase.
Oh, because they are sight. Got it.
Because they're
I learned. So if you just put it together.
It's okay. If your cat tends to run away, and you get that like streak of cat, your sighthound is not going to think. It's not going to be a conscious thought. They're just going to start chasing, and that can end badly.
Yeah.
But some sighthounds, like as long as the cat is confident, they get along great with cats.
Yeah.
If you do have like a greyhound or something, especially if you got it from Greyhound Rescue, they will often tell you whether that greyhound is appropriate for cats. They do testing, most of them.
Oh, that's good.
Because of this.
Yeah.
So, so what you want is you want a dog who's really respectful of the cat so that the cat feels really confident. Right. And honestly, if your cat at some point reaches out and goes claws across the dog's face, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because now the dog will respect the cat.
Totally.
I'm not saying create that situation.
Right.
But don't be angry with your cat if your cat does that, because your cat is just creating safety.
Right. Chance, my dog Chance, he's not the best with cats. He doesn't, like, he would be besties with them if they didn't run away. But the minute they, like, you know, like, he just wants to get close enough to check them out, because he's been in close encounters with cats who were super calm, like old cats, and he was fine. But as soon as a cat runs away, he is like, I mean, now he's 15, so he doesn't, the cat has one up on him for sure. But he still tries to chase him. Yeah. He can't.
Yeah.
He can't do it.
But this reminds me that something else, because we were talking about mats, if you train your cat to stay on a mat.
Interesting.
Then you can have your dog on one mat, your cat on one mat. You slowly move the mats closer together. The cat learns that they can confidently hang out on their mat while the dog is getting a little closer.
Okay.
And they can make friends that way. And I will say, I love cat-dog friendships. They can be really beautiful friendships.
Yeah.
Cats can learn to play like dogs, and dogs can learn to play like cats. Mm-hmm. So
my good friend just got a cat. She got a kitten and a puppy at the same time. So they're besties.
Oh, wow. Yeah. They'll get along fine.
Totally fine.
Yeah.
It's really cute. What about, do people ever ask you if their dog should sleep in the same room with them?
You know, I get asked that a lot. Yeah. And I'm going to say, perfect world, we are the dog's family, right?
Yeah.
And dogs are social animals, just like we are social animals. Mm-hmm. And then we've got this really cool thing with dogs that we don't have with any other species on this planet, which is that we have evolved together to live together. So in fact, some dogs would rather hang out with a person than another dog. Like that's how deep the connection is. Mm-hmm. So I would say I always want the dog to have the opportunity to be in the same room with me.
Right.
I usually leave the door open so that the dog can leave if they're like, whatever, they're snoring. I don't want to be around that. Or, or the carpet is too warm. I had one dog that he would, like, he'd stay on his bed until he was convinced we were asleep, which sometimes we weren't. And then he would get up and go lie down on the tile, which was in another room.
Yeah.
So, you know, but he had the option to come in if he wanted to hang out with us.
Yeah.
So I do like to have a dog in your room if they're not creating problems.
Right. If they're calm and they're chill with whatever's happening. Yeah.
Yeah. So you could crate your dog in your room or have your dog in a bed in your room. But if you're having issues, I would definitely say, you know, get that crate out of the room for nighttime so that it's normal for the dog to be separated from you at night.
Right.
And in general, I will say that one of the ways that dogs do become a problem for sort of amorous activities is if they are used to sleeping in the bed.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I have no problem with your dog sleeping in your bed, but you have to bear in mind that that may put a little bit of a kink in your love life.
Relationship.
So to speak. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's why, so the key to all of this is putting the, your dog can sleep in your bed with you, but if you give them these other skills, implement these other skills where they're able to go and be okay by themselves in their crate, be okay on their mat when other people are over ahead of time, they'll know that when so-and-so is over, it's not okay for them to sleep in the bed and they can go do this nice other thing instead, right?
Yeah. And then one of the things I would recommend is just in case, because of the way the brain makes associations, that's something we know about basically all animals. It's how animals' brains work. So otherwise they would, well, any multicellular animal, otherwise they're going to die because they're not going to make the proper association and they'll wander into a dangerous situation twice and it won't always work out. So what that means is if every time my partner Charlie comes over, the dog goes in the crate for the night, the dog is going to start associating Charlie with being sent to the crate.
Right, right.
So I want to make sure that the dog also sleeps in the crate sometimes when no one's over.
Got it. Okay.
And it doesn't have to be every night, but I would say, like, let's have the dog sleep in another room in the crate at least 5 or 10 times before the first time Charlie comes over. Because again, it's first impressions, right?
Yeah.
If the very first time is when Charlie comes over, the impression will be stronger.
Right. Okay. Can we end on a happier note? Because not that this wasn't a happy note, but just, you know, some ways that our dogs can, like, improve our relationships. Dogs can bring a lot of joy and bring people together also versus just bullying their way into our love lives, right?
So that's absolutely true. So true. So I'm going to say a couple things. First of all, sometimes you meet someone over a dog.
Totally. Yeah.
I used to have a dog who was just gorgeous. He was like the supermodel of the dog world. Mm-hmm. He really was. People would literally stop driving down the street, roll down their window and say, "You're dog is really gorgeous."
Yeah.
People would come up to me and tell me that. And what this meant was that when my husband was walking this dog around, women were always coming up to talk to him. We were like, he's wasted. Our dog is wasted, you know?
Totally. And
so sometimes you could just literally meet someone because you've got a dog and they've got a dog, or maybe you've got a dog and they want a dog and they don't have a dog, or they love dogs and they come and they talk to you. So dogs as matchmakers. I see it happen. Totally do see it happen.
People are definitely more apt to talk to people if out in the world. If for whatever reason, it seems much safer to talk to somebody who has a dog with them versus to talk, just striking up a conversation with somebody out on the street who doesn't have a dog with them, right? So
And it's also, I think part of it is you figure if a dog likes the person must be at least a little okay.
That too. Yeah.
And also it gives you something to talk about.
Yeah.
Oh, what a beautiful pit bull. I've always loved pit bulls, or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
So that's one thing. Another thing that I've found a lot of dogs do is, this is going to sound kind of funny, but they get really upset when you argue. And so you learn to talk more rationally about things.
Yes. Yep. My dog used to do that with me and my ex. He would sit and he'd get very upset. He would sit in front of me and he'd get like worried. He didn't get aggressive or weird around him, but he could tell he was very, and then he would remove himself from the room and go into the other room and just kind of sit there and stare at us from the other room. Like he did not like it at all. This was when he was a puppy, but many moons ago. Yeah. But it made me be like, you're making the dog upset. We need to take it down a little bit. Yeah. Like,
exactly.
You're really upsetting him. And it worked. I mean, it was a reason for everybody to take it down a notch, right?
So. Yeah. And it doesn't mean you can't have the conversation. It just means you're going to have the conversation with less of a yelling tone.
Yeah.
And that often means that so remember how I was saying when we're under stress, we don't think as clearly.
Yeah.
When we're yelling at each other, we are not our best selves.
Yeah. No, we are not. Nope.
And even if we have a really valid concern we want to raise, you know, we won't express ourselves the best way. So if the dog helps us tone it down and say, listen, I feel like every time I talk to you about this, we don't seem to make any progress. Can I please explain to you how I feel instead of yelling at the person?
Right.
You know?
That's
and then you do the whole thing that they say, you know, I feel like there's all these words you use that help make it less.
Right.
Less intense, heated. I guess, for them.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's another thing where I think dogs bring us together. Another thing that I love is adventures with your dog bring you together.
Yep.
So like for me, my husband did not grow up hiking. I guess that's the best way to express it.
Yep.
And so when I wanted to take him on hikes, he would be like, whatever, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Then we got a dog.
Yep.
And all of a sudden we were taking the dog on hikes and then we were sharing this hiking experience. And even without a dog, we hike.
Yep.
So, you know, it can add things like you're going for walks together.
Right.
It gives you a chance to get off of the cell phone.
Yep.
Because that's one of my rules. Never walk a dog with a cell phone in your hand. You can have it in your pocket.
I love that.
You're a doctor. There might be an emergency. I get it. But I usually put mine on flight mode because there's no emergencies for me. But it brings you together to go out with your dog and have these adventures. Mm-hmm. And it's like dogs are like another family member in a lot of ways. And your relationship is different when it's just the two of you and when it's the dog.
Right.
And in the ideal world, and I see this a lot, in most households, the dog enriches their life and makes their relationship better.
Right.
So there are those dogs who are squirming between your legs as you're trying to hug, but that's like 95% of dogs probably never even thought about doing that.
Yeah.
So just remember that your dog also does, even if your dog does do that, think about all the other things they do to make you laugh, take the edge off of things.
Teach you how to love.
Make things more fun. Yep. Yeah. And that's such a good point. I mean, my gosh, what better example than your dog being like, I know you completely screwed up your last work project, but I love you
anyway. Totally. Unconditional love. That's true.
Aww. It's something.
Well, thank you, Reed. Do you have anything that you want to add?
Yeah. So I'm just going to say, this is an old line that I used to say all the time, and I don't say it as much. Put on your rose-colored glasses, especially if your dog is making you a little crazy, which I completely understand, and you have every right to feel those feelings. Your feelings are valid. The situation is frustrating. I get it. But put on your rose-colored glasses and start paying attention to all the things the dog does that you adore,
yeah,
and all the things that make you smile and all the things that make your day better. Yeah. And just try to focus on those, mm-hmm, at least a little of the time. It's like doing a gratitude practice, totally, before you go to, yep, sleep. You know, when you go to sleep, just think, oh, Fifi made me smile and Fido was so funny sleeping upside down. And then Fifi and Fido playing was so much fun to watch. And yeah, they kind of get annoying sometimes when we're watching a football, right, game and we, you know, we're like grabbing each other's hands and like, why are you grabbing each other's, right, hands? This is not that exciting. Right. But look at all these other good things they do. So sometimes just keeping that perspective, yeah, is really helpful. Plus, every once in a while, your dog's going to let you know that a situation is not a great idea. Mm-hmm. Like if someone comes into your home and your dog is like, I don't like, yeah, him, and that person's not willing to work, right, on it.
Right. Then it's not right.
I don't know that that person's, yeah, someone I want in my, yeah, life.
Totally. Totally.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you, Irit.
Thank you. It's so much fun. I wish we could do this every week.
I know. Well, maybe we can. Stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Beru Podcast. As always, if you enjoy the episode, please don't forget to rate and follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Beru Podcast. If you have a story of canine companionship that you want to share with me, or if you have a comment or question, I would love to hear from you. You can email me, charlotte@theberu.com. All right, you guys, let's chat next week.